Oh, it is so good to be back on the air. Good morning. Happy Monday. Welcome into the program. Bill Ryder with you, coming off a vacation in exotic Iowa. It was great for me. I got to go back home, and I'm fired up about this week and the next few months and the next couple hours to get back into some sports talk radio. And it's not just because Ryan Hickey's gone and Nico Scarlato's is here. It's just because I missed doing the show. This is one of those jobs I'm lucky enough to love, and we've got a lot of things to unpack for you here going forward. Let me get the reminders out of the way. If you want to call into the program, 888-710-4ISN, 888-710-4476 over on X. It's Sports Writer, Sports R-E-I-T-E-R, Emery Hunt from CBS Sports HQ. Will be on the program first time, first appearance for him here on the show. We will do buy or sell. Nico had a great idea. We're going to do five things you need to know, even if you don't want to, on the NFL preseason. I'm going to tell you about one of, I think, the most important, potentially significant quarterback stories in football this year that very few people are talking about. No, it's not Shador. We're going to start with that in a second. I'm going to give you a mini movie review. Might tell you about my travels to Iowa and how a dude dropped a suitcase on my head because he didn't know how to put it in the overhead carrier, and that almost fights a little strong, but it was not a great moment on the outbound flight. There's real worries in Indianapolis. They drafted a guy, you know who he is, a few years ago, and it turns out he's awful and just continues to be awful. We will get into that. So many things to unpack, but I want to open a little bit of optimism, a little bit of excitement. Look, Shador Sanders is a lot of things. He's a Rorschach test. Remember those things? I've never actually had. I always wanted to go and have one of these tests where I sit in a fancy room and I sit down and the guy with the notepad holds up an ink blot and what do you see? And I go, I don't know, a radio show. That's what Shador is. Because you can see in his storylines, his college performances, the Friday evening game that we're about to talk about, kind of whatever you want to see. And we can get into whether they're setting him up to fail. I'm not sure how interesting a conversation that is, given the fact he was the fifth-round draft pick and they drafted a quarterback two spots in front of him. For me, it's not about setting him up to fail or not. It's you'll have to earn success here because we did not draft you for that. We drafted you for potential, but there's every reason to believe it could be the other guy in Dylan Gabriel who takes your slot. So I'm not worried about the Browns' obligation to Shador Sanders. That went away when he got passed up in the first and the second and the third and the fourth round. I'm not worried about whether or not he set the world on fire. He played well. Here's what I realized watching that game, thinking about it, watching his post-game conversations, watching Kevin Stefanski's post-game interview where a bunch of Browns fans lost their minds and tried to interpret his body language as proof he's trying to get them to fail. I just want Shador Sanders to be successful. Doesn't mean that he will be. Doesn't mean that he's good enough. Again, you can look at that game over the sort of weekend Friday. You can look at his career. You can look at what's gone on in Cleveland, and you can see what you want to see. What I know is he's an exciting quarterback with a big name and a ton of scrutiny, a lot of pressure, and he's been put in a position, as I told you, he's got to earn whatever he gets in the National Football League. He's not going to be given the opportunities that Anthony Richardson has been given, or Bryce Young, who didn't play a lot but played in that exact same game Browns played the Panthers. It's hard to take real meaning out of a lot of preseason games. Do you care? I don't. You shouldn't. That the Browns, and I put this in air quotes, won the preseason game against the Panthers 30-10? No. And I'm not sure how much we'd care that a fourth string, and that's still what he is, quarterback, played well or didn't play well if it wasn't Shador Sanders, if it wasn't Deion's kid. And that's not a shot. I just found myself watching him play. He played well and liking the dude and wanting to believe in some optimism and wanting to think maybe he can claim this opportunity. Let me give you the Rorschach test of positivity first. Let me just, and I'll get to the other stuff. Let me just lean into maybe it can work. Maybe he can be successful. This is a young man who in college at Colorado, I know it wasn't the SEC, but he did not play at Dubuque Community College, okay? He played in a real program who completed 74% of his passes. He was the most efficient quarterback in college football in his time playing for his dad. And you saw some of that touch. You saw some of that composure. I know he didn't go up against, even in that game, the first-team defense for the Panthers, and so he hasn't really had first-team reps in any step of his career in the NFL in the sense of going up against top-tier NFL defenders. I get it. The guy was still 14-23. He still had a couple touchdowns. He didn't turn the ball over. He looked good when he got outside of the pocket. He had, what, four rushes for almost 20 yards. He looked like he belonged. There was a calmness there. He looked really impressive in delivering those touchdowns. And after the game, and I like the way that he approached it. I don't think Shador Sanders going up to media members and saying, why are you being negative to me? Because the answer is that's the job, man. That's the deal. But I had this sense of, not sure if I believe in Shador Sanders, just I want him to be successful. I like his joy for the game. I like the idea that he can get past the difficulty of carrying that name. And there was a little joy, a little gleam in his eye. It was a really good performance when he talked after that game about his opportunity to, and it's you know, with an asterisk, to start in that preseason game for the Browns.
I'll say the most important thing of being a quarterback is leading your team. I'll say definitely the scoreboard. I think we did that pretty good. And just, you know, just being consistent, even though if things going our way or not going our way, being able to bounce back and not stay in the hole. You know, being a quarterback is going to be ups, downs, it's going to be pros, cons, everything. So you just got to stay level-headed through it.
I got to tell you, I don't understand why we sports fans, media people, whatever, root for other people to fail. I do understand when I get to know certain people why I root for them to fail. I want Chris Paul to fail. We've had that conversation 1,000 times. I do. There are people that I want Jay Cutler to fail at whatever he's doing right now because I'm a Bears fan and I hate him. And he might be a very nice man. I don't know. But in a vacuum, before we get a sense of people, before our sports tribal loyalties or our personalities or the personalities of the people that we're rooting for or against kick in, I want everybody to be successful. It doesn't work that way. It's hard to even get a shot to play quarterback in the National Football League. And the reality is that an 103-year-old Joe Flacco, a injury-prone vagabond bouncing around, but still maybe the guy Kenny Pickett, a young Dylan Gabriel, he was drafted in the third round of this past draft, and Shador Sanders are not all going to be able to start for the Cleveland Browns. They're not all going to be able to be the backup for the Cleveland Browns. I got it. I understand it. And Cleveland, I don't even think it's a chance. They just saw the ability to buy low, right? Sell when they're buying, buy when they're selling. Shador Sanders, a year ago, many people thought it was a realistic expectation that he would be maybe the first pick in the draft. Certainly, perhaps the first, second, third, if we got crazy quarterback taken. And then you know the story. He fell and he fell and he fell and he fell. And in the fifth round, the Browns kind of looked around after taking Gabriel and said, what the hell, there's upside here. And so maybe they have a plan. Maybe there's a patience there. Maybe there's an understanding more than the discourse over the last 2 days where everyone has dissected every moment of Shador Sanders' game. And I'll get to the Rorschach test that tells you maybe we should just calm down. But Kevin Stefanski, head coach of the Browns, certainly, and I hope this is real, sounded like a guy who understands that for Shador, it's going to be, if he's successful, and it's an if, a process.
The situations were invaluable for Shador, for all of our offense. We got a 3rd-and-1 where he had a quarterback sneak. I mean, there's just a lot of football, and that's by design with him getting a ton of reps in this game, and he'll get a ton of reps next week as well. That's all part of our development of our young players.
Look, Shador looked good. It sparked in me an optimism that I want to lean into. I hope he can be successful. And I don't know how much you can take from a preseason football game in the National Football League for a 4-string quarterback. And that is not to say that he can't do it. It's just to say I'm not sure even 14 of 23, 138 yards, 2 touchdowns tells you anything, good or bad. But if you want to lean into the negativity, if you want to point out that we're just as likely to maybe root for Dylan Gabriel to succeed or somebody else, it is true that Shador has not had first-team reps in the sense he hasn't gone up against first-team NFL defenders, elite NFL defenders. All right, noted, fair. It's also true it's the Panthers. And look, it's a preseason game, so no teams, there are no teams that are particularly impressive, but it's not the Ravens coming up on the Ravens who maybe have something to prove or throwing some first-team defenders or just trying to get the rust off. And the reality is that typically, if you play a lot or at all in the first week of an NFL preseason game, it's because you're not a part of your team's plans. Bryce Young, who I want to get to later, and looked good, literally threw the ball six times. It was 4 for 6 because you don't endanger or risk or play, traditionally, quarterbacks who are actually going to play when it matters, when the season rolls along. I mean, good news for Shadur, I suppose. Bad news for Stefanski is nobody's looked that impressive. Nobody can stay healthy and or has been able to pull away. Joe Flacco's 41 years old. He was really good 2 years ago when he was in Cleveland. He wasn't good last year when he was somewhere else. And the fact is that Shadur Sanders has not been given the trust by the Browns so far to be the guy. He hasn't gone up against the kind of talent that he needs to. He did, in fact, have a conversation, maybe it's a confrontation, we can call it what we want, with a media member where Shadur said, in effect, why are you so negative to me? That's not where the focus should be. It is not the job of NFL media members or anybody else, me included or you, to throw roses at the young man's feet and tell him he's amazing. The real thing, though, is that just the scrutiny that he's under, the fact I'm opening this show with Shadur Sanders, the fact that every single person, it feels like, in America parsed what the game did or didn't mean. Shadur's good, Shadur sucks. The Browns are good for him, they're setting up to fail. You're a jerk because you don't like Shadur. You're an idiot because you do like Shadur. Is all because of the gravitational pull of the storyline of Shadur Sanders, not the quarterback. Not the quarterback. People in the NFL are not brilliant, but they're typically not particularly stupid. And while they make mistakes, there's a reason that Shadur Sanders, for every one of the teams in the league, fell and fell and fell and fell. I don't know what he is. You don't know what he is. And I would venture to say, despite the fact that he played pretty well in a preseason game that's fairly meaningless against other guys who may not play very much in the league, I don't think the Browns know what he is. Here's all that I know about Shadur. I want him to have success. I like talking about him. I think he's interesting. I'm fascinated by this. He's a Nepo kid, but he's also got to do one of the hardest things that I think there is to do in American sports, in American culture, in the world, anywhere, and that is live up to a giant name of somebody else. Does he have opportunity that maybe other people wouldn't? Yeah, probably, right? Sure, I guess. But Deion Sanders is top five, maybe top five player in the history of the game. It depends how you want to rank quarterbacks and where you want to put him. But Deion is a pure athlete. Was a remarkable, remarkable player. And his son did not get that athleticism. And so the challenge for him to be successful, to live up to that, our scrutiny, his own ego, all of those things are interesting, fascinating. I don't know which way it's going to go. I just know, I was kind of net neutral on him before the game. I want him to be successful. I hope he does well. I'm rooting for the guy. And that doesn't mean it's going to work, but I sure as hell hope that it does. All right, 888-710-4ISN is the phone number. I finally watched Happy Gilmore 2, so I want to give you a mini movie review on that. It's a very you know what? Happy Gilmore 2 is a lot like Shadur Sanders. There's a range of opinions, and people think you're an idiot if you don't agree with them. And I have a very hardcore take on this, all right? I'm coming with a real opinion on HG2, all right? We're going to get into it. We're going to get into it. But I also want to tell you about the quarterback story renaissance possibility that Shadur has been overshadowing, the biggest potential quarterback story in the National Football League in terms of a change, a surprise, a shift, coming up next here on Writer Than You.
You're listening to the Writer Than You podcast. Welcome back to Writer Than You.
One of the main reasons why I love the way you put your format together is you throw out some various topics and you let it kind of marinate, and it's wonderful. It's what I think good sports talk radio should be.
On the Infinity Sports Network.
All right, welcome back into the show. Bill Ryder with you. Thanks for listening. I'm going to get to Happy Gilmore, maybe the most controversial topic in America right now, in a second. Happy Gilmore 2. So Shadur Sanders basically commands so much of the limelight, and we've seen these stories that pop up. There are certain figures, some deservedly so, some that turn out not to be, who are just machines of interest. And whether it's Tim Tebow or Johnny Manziel or Caitlin Clark or Shohei Ohtani or LeBron James, right? Some worthy of that, some who do not live up to that. Shadur Sanders is in that pantheon of people who are just interesting. who I want to talk about, who you want to hear about, who we pay attention to, who dominate headlines regardless of their position or success or importance to their team. Shedeur Sanders is not that important to the Cleveland Browns. He's not starting this year to start the year. The odds that he'll be the starter in week 3, 4, 5, 6 are not zero, but they're not high. Their hopes for success are they don't have to turn to an uncertain backup. They're just that he's not that important. But he's interesting, and interesting is what we do. We don't we watch sports because we're interested in them. Nothing wrong with being drawn to certain people, figures who are really interesting, really good, really bad, whatever. But I think overshadowed by this is a quarterback who has the chance to be dynamic, who actually won everything there is to win in college, who actually played in the game against Shedeur Sanders. It's easy to forget that Bryce Young was once highly celebrated and highly touted because he was awful at the start of his career. And in a lot of ways, the Panthers have become, if not the new Browns for what they do to quarterbacks, on the same level. Remember, Sam Darnold and Baker Mayfield both went through there on their way to finding relatively serious success after their highly drafted status with their various teams. And I just want to just, we don't have to talk about this forever. We don't. And 888-710-4ISN if you want to call in. But the most important quarterback who played or didn't play, who was on the roster in that Browns-Panthers game over the weekend was Bryce Young. He threw the ball 6 times. He completed 4 passes. He had a touchdown. He led his team. None of it matters. It's the preseason. I just want to remind you that last year, and it's hard to give a you-know-what because the Panthers are the Panthers, and they weren't very good. And even his stats were like, eh, not really that impressed. He had 15 touchdowns to 9 picks. But over the last 8 games, Bryce Young found something, clicked into form, got pretty good, was impressive, led some game-winning drives, went 3-5, which I know doesn't sound amazing, but 3-5 for the Panthers is basically 7-1 for everybody else over a 7-game stretch, or 8-game stretch, and he threw 12 touchdown passes and just 3 picks. And people in Carolina, people that follow the Panthers, and know that's not most of you and it's not many people, they're cautiously really optimistic. And we're talking about Shedeur and whether he can, and we should, whether he can be the backup quarterback to grow and eventually supplant Dylan Gabriel as the maybe quarterback of the future, who, if given an opportunity to be a starter in the NFL, maybe could, I don't know, it's possible, have some success. Bryce Young is a former stud, former star, baller, great. Drafted by an organization that goes out of its way to destroy quarterback careers. And I just want to bookmark it for you. That I think that, and this happens, right? It's hard to foresee the future in sports, especially in the NFL. The margins are really thin. The line between success and failure for teams and for individuals, it's not stark. It's a parity-driven league. And it's hard to get a sense of, nobody saw Sam Darnold coming last year. Nobody saw that. I don't even think that they didn't see it coming to Minnesota. He was supposed to be the backup. And I'm just telling you that Young has all the signs, is flashing all the potential to be really good. And to maybe 6, 7, 8, 9 weeks from now, when the Panthers maybe, I know it's a long shot, are scrambling at 500 and are overachieving, he could be the next big, interesting, surprising story. He's not as interesting right now as Shedeur. But like a lot of quarterbacks, there's this new trend in the NFL, and we'll ask Emory Hunt about this later in the show. We are starting to see quarterbacks whose careers are dead be resurrected. That's the word I'm looking for. That wasn't true for a long time. I mean, I'm not sure there's a better example than Baker Mayfield. I mean, that guy got pushed aside for Deshaun Watson, went to Carolina, didn't really work out, went to Tampa Bay, had to win the starting job, and now I don't know where he ranks, but he's probably a top 10 quarterback, and he wins playoff games. There's no reason Bryce Young can't be that same thing. All right, 888-710-4ISN. Good morning, Nico Skarlatos. Don't call him Peter. What's up, dude?
How are you
doing? Welcome back.
Glad you're back as well. We missed
you. Yeah, I was in Iowa. Had a great time. My parents live in Iowa City. Had a direct flight from LAX to Iowa. A young man did drop a bag squarely on my head when I wasn't looking and didn't apologize. So that got a little awkward.
Yeah, it was not a position I would want to be in.
It was also 6 in the morning. Wherever you are, young man, I'm not sorry. I'm not sorry at all. say you're sorry when you drop a bag on somebody. It was a big bag. What do you have in there, bowling balls? You a professional bowler? What's in that bag? All right. Do you know how? I actually watched Happy Gilmore 2 on the plane. Do you know how the mini movie review works? Are you familiar with this? You want me to?
I'm good to go. But if you want to give the audience a refresher, let's do it.
So basically, we're going to get into it in a second. I'm going to give us a certain amount of time. I'm going to try to get the movie review done by then. And then with great glee, Mr. Skarlatos is going to air horn me out of basically the review. Have you seen Happy Gilmore 1 or 2?
I have seen both. So
okay. So I'm going to give you my review, and then I want yours. Because people are all over the map. Before I watched it, I heard it was the worst movie ever made. And I also heard that people who thought that are the dumbest people to ever walk the earth. I've heard a lot of variations. Let's see which of the two that I am. Let's do the mini movie review.
Shorter than the shortest attention span. Shorter than Kevin Durant's commitment to a team. And shorter than a movie trailer. It's Bill Ryder's Super Short Movie Report.
Just before we get started, I just want to point out that when we first made the imaging, what you just heard for the segment, I had them put the Kevin Durant thing in because it was timely 3 years ago. It's still timely. It still works. Amazing. All right. Okay, put 30 seconds on the clock for me. Get your air horn of destruction ready. And go. All right, look, Happy Gilmore is one of the greatest movies in the history of cinema, and I'm not kidding. I love everything about it. It's farcical, it's sophomoric, it's stupid, and I loved it. I don't want to ruin too many things, but the cameos alone are incredible, and I'm just going to say two words of magic and beauty and genius. John Daly. Don't know what I'm talking about? Watch the movie. There was a scene with a golf cart where I lost it so hard in the airplane that I couldn't breathe, and I was laughing so hard my kids thought I was having a heart attack. I don't know why I found it so funny, but I did. It is an amazing movie. Everyone who hates it is an idiot. Just kidding. If you don't like it, that's fine. I loved it. I thought I was going to hate it. Nico, I loved Happy Gilmore too.
I just didn't like, and I apologize for the spoilers for whoever hasn't seen it yet, but
don't spoil.
I was so upset in the first 5 minutes.
Yeah. Really? We can't tell you. There's a big. I thought it was, but like it added some heart to the. Okay, so there's a. We'll just tell you that there's an early death in the film. Also, in the first one, what was the guy's name? Chubbs? Was that his name?
Yeah, Chubbs.
He dies. I couldn't remember. Did he get eaten by an alligator?
Well, that's why he was missing the left hand, right? That's why I forget in the end. I haven't seen the first one in so long.
I need to watch the first one again.
Yeah.
There's a pretty shocking death scene. Yeah, like 30 seconds into the film. You didn't like it? I watched the movie with my parents, and my mother goes, "Oh, no!" really loud, because I'd already seen it on the plane. Then we watched it again.
I mean, I guess it made sense for the plot that they were going for with the movie.
Like,
without that happening, the rest of the movie doesn't make sense. So they needed to do it, but it was sad. I mean, I guess it made sense.
You're a softie.
But yeah, I'm a softie.
You're a softie, and
that.
I respect that. I also found it. Look, it was awful, and I felt awful. It was also just ridiculous, and I found it kind of funny. The John Daly cameo. John Daly, this is a bit of a spoiler, but I'm just going to tell you. John Daly, I never thought of this, is sort of a real-life Happy Gilmore, especially the incarnation, sort of what's happened to Happy since last we saw him 20 or 30 years ago. And he plays himself as an idiotic, washed-up, broken, stupid man. It was pretty... I thought it was an actor playing John Daly at first, and then I was, oh, that's actually John Daly. They have, other than Tiger Woods, basically every golfer who's anyone is in the film. Current, past. It's an ode to golf. I don't know. If you like the first Happy Gilmore, you'll love the second one. And I don't understand the... I mean, did you hate it? There's like a... There was so much hatred toward it. I thought, okay, it must be awful. And people are trying to like it. I put off watching it for that reason. I don't want to say too much, but the scene where he first goes on the golf course with the three, and he's the extra to the foursome, which we've all been that person. There's a golf cart scene that I laughed so hard. As I said, do you ever get to where you can't stop laughing? You have tears. That's what it was for me.
Your stomach starts hurting. Yep.
It hurt. My kids got a video of it of me just like having, because that's how long it went on the airplane. All right. Have a good one. I don't have time for this Anthony Richardson thing, so let me just tell you that he sucks. He's not very good. He's a failure. It's not working. He did not get a lot of time. He took a really bad sack in the Colts preseason game and dislocated his pinky. He's going to play again. But when you are at risk of losing your starting job to Daniel Jones, something has gone terribly, terribly wrong. I'm not going to give you an overarching take here. Maybe we'll circle back later in the show. I understand when you invest in something, you need to give it every opportunity to be successful. But there comes a point, and I've been to Vegas enough to know this, where you're just throwing good money after bad. And you have to cut your losses and just understand that nothing's going to salvage what you've already given away. And that's where the Colts are. There's not a great solution. Maybe the solution is just play him, win three games, and then draft Arch next year. But I'm not sure that's what Colt fans are looking for. It's early, it's preseason, but we have a body of evidence to suggest Anthony Richardson's just not good enough. And whatever the selection that you used on him, it was the fourth overall pick in the draft a few years ago, it's time to move on. And it's time for us to move on to five things you need to know about the preseason. We're going to do that in a second. We're going to kind of catch you up on what's going on as football gets ready for games that actually matter. Cannot wait. The phone number is always 888-710-4ISN. Some preseason NFL talk.
You're listening to the Writer Than You podcast. Welcome back to Writer Than You.
The slam dunk contest is just dumb. It's a slam dumb contest.
That's good.
I've renamed it. Whatever. What's the guy's name? The dude from the G League? Mac McWhocaresylung? Or whatever his name is? Nobody cares.
On the Infinity Sports Network.
All right, welcome back into the show. Nico's filling in for Ryan Hickey right now, today, this week, because Ryan is gone. Would you like to hear a little wisdom I put together? I don't have a lot of wisdom. I have a very small amount, but I got some from my travels. Are you ready?
I would love to hear this.
Because you've lived most of your life in the New York area, right? I'm basically a hobo. I've lived everywhere. I've lived everywhere. My parents are from Iowa. I went to high school in Iowa. I live in L.A. now, which I love. I lived in New York City for 2 years in Brooklyn, which I loved. But I've lived in Iowa, I've lived in Missouri, I've lived in the Chicago suburbs, I've lived in Arkansas, I've lived in Miami, I've lived in a small town in Missouri and a medium-sized town. I lived in St. Louis and Kansas City. I've lived in Washington, D.C. I lived in Green Bay, Wisconsin. I've lived everywhere. I've lived a whole bunch of places. And what struck me about going back to Iowa is just how amazing this country is and how it doesn't matter where you are. It's a beautiful place, man. Because I live in L.A. and it's flashy and we've got the ocean and I love L.A. But being back in Iowa was amazing. It was amazing. So wherever you're listening, whatever you're about, appreciate you. And I want you to know that this is not one of those shows. Not that there's others here, but there are in other networks where we're going to be obnoxious about where we happen to be stationed. I happen to be sitting in L.A. and I love L.A. But man, I also love Arkansas and Iowa and Missouri and Florida and all the places I've been. And it's just, there's a lot of great places out there. You should get out, too. Every producer I've had on the show basically has never traveled. Stu had never been anywhere. Stuart Kovacs. D-Cell's never been anywhere. Ryan Hickey. We'll put together like a Nico Travels America plan. And then we'll see if the bosses will pay for it, which they won't. But we'll just put it together.
I have been to that area. I did my undergrad in Ohio, Ashland University.
Oh, then you've been around.
So
where'd you go?
Ashland University in Ohio. Yeah.
Okay.
I must say, the Midwest, probably the most underrated part of this country. Awesome out
there.
People
are so nice, man. Because the problem is I was trained to make eye contact and smile at people as an Iowan. And I can't tell you how many times people are like, what are you looking at? Or women are like, ugh, what a creep. And in Iowa, I do it. And everyone's like, hello, how are you? Nice, how are you today? Like, it's like I feel like the ugly duckling, right? Where it turns out I'm a swan of just good manners, but I'm around people who are not, and that's fine. Because in LA, you make eye contact with people, and it's, what do you look? I literally get a what are you looking at once a week, or yeah? And I'm like, oh, hi, just hello, because I can't untrain the eye contact thing. When I first moved to New York, and I started making eye contact with everybody on the train, people are like, what is wrong with this guy? You know, the train's safe, but if someone's a little off, people will move away from them. It took me a few months to realize that I was the person people thought made the train unsafe. They'd go to a different car because I was like, hello, good morning to you. Anyways, good to be back home. Good to be back in beautiful Iowa. Let's do five things you need to know on the NFL preseason so far.
Your security clearance is on a need-to-know basis. And these are five things you need to know. Number one.
All right, so the number one overall pick in this past year's NFL draft, Cam Ward, made his preseason debut for the Tennessee Titans. Looked pretty good, 5-for-8, 67 yards passing. Did lead a touchdown drive for Tennessee in that opening series in their week one preseason game.
He did look okay, didn't he? Like, I mean, it's the Titans. It's hard to have a lot of optimism. It's and we shouldn't be surprised because this is the history of the NFL, but it's amazing how many quarterbacks taken with the top pick or one of the top picks fail. You know, in the lead up to the NFL draft, there becomes this narrative, this idea of it's a sure thing whoever gets drafted. And then as soon as that poor person is, their name is called, it's basically a thousand reasons why they're probably not going to make it. I haven't done this in 5 or 6 years, but back when I was writing about the NFL, I went through 30 years of the NFL draft quarterbacks and broke down taken with the first pick, one of the first two quarterbacks taken, taken in the first round, taken as one of the first five quarterbacks, and at every sort of level of how you can break this up, you basically have a 50% washout rate. And then of the 50% that remain, only about 10% of those people have massive success. Most people become Jamarcus Russell or Cam Ward or Anthony Richardson or whoever. Baker Mayfield looked like he was on the path for that. I mean, I can remember when, oh my God, Bill, remember the names. I remember when Jared Goff and Carson Wentz were the next great thing, and then they both failed, and then Jared Goff kind of figured it out, but would you describe Carson Wentz's career as successful? Because I wouldn't.
Not really.
He's not a washout, but I wouldn't. He's not successful. I mean, he made money, and he, I guess, technically won a Super Bowl. I think Nick Foles has had a more successful career. All of which is to say, good signs from Cam Ward, early, early days, and history, unfortunately, is against him and most guys that get drafted with a high draft pick to try to make it at that position in the NFL.
Number two.
Another top 10 pick, not in this past year's draft, but in 2024, J.J. McCarthy returned to the field. He missed all of his rookie season with a knee injury, so he was back in the starter's role for the Minnesota Vikings, played a couple of series, 4-for-7, 30 yards, led a field goal drive. Didn't look dominant, but I guess you could say that it's just because he's trying to work his way back from that injury, trying to get comfortable with the offense.
I am extraordinarily worried about J.J. McCarthy, and some of the things that you've read out of Minnesota are worrisome. I won't pretend to have done any NFL reporting in the last 4 or 5 years, but I was talking to a buddy a week ago who does cover the NFL. I don't think he'd want me to say who he is, and I think he's working on something. He had expressed an extraordinary level of pessimism about J.J. McCarthy, and this goes back to the Anthony Richardson thing. You had something good with Sam Darnold. You saw its limitations, frankly, at the end of the season last year, week 17, and then in the playoffs. So I understand where, if you're the head coach and you think, and maybe you are, that you're the reason for that success, you would turn to your handpicked QB. But there's a lot at risk here. The NFC North is the most interesting division in football, I think, by far. And it's not just interesting. It has the potential to be highly formidable. But it's in a weird transition this year. I think the Packers are going to be great. I'm all in on the Packers. I'm all in on Jordan Love. The Bears are a huge question mark. I don't know what they're going to be. I'm a Bears fan, so I'm sort of used to this. But I think there's a range. 4 wins, 12 wins, none of those things would surprise me. I think it's more likely it's 4 wins because it's the Bears. And everything in between. Then you have Detroit obviously losing his two coordinators. They've become head coaches, including Ben Johnson, who's obviously in Chicago. And then the Vikings. I mean, a change of quarterback is very significant. So the J.J. McCarthy story, unlike some of these other guys, he doesn't get to learn. There is no, there's learning curves. The expectation for the Vikings is that they're a top team in the NFC North, and if they are that, that means they're a top team in the National Football League. So McCarthy better figure it out pretty quickly. If you had to bet, yes or no, is McCarthy successful this year, would you go yes or no? I'll go no.
I'm going to say it depends on what I guess you're classifying as successful. I think they're good enough to be
11 wins.
Team. Yeah.
11 wins.
I was going to say 9 or 10, so right in that range.
I think, isn't 9 too big of a step? I mean, they were a game away. I'm trying to remember if that game was in Detroit. I think it was. They were a week 17 game away from getting the bye. And so, I don't know, 9 wins? I think that's too big of a regret. I think it's possible. I just... maybe 10-7. Maybe.
Number three.
The Cincinnati Bengals played their preseason opener in Philadelphia this weekend, and most of the starters played after there was a lot of conversation in the past couple of years. The Bengals are 1-4 in their last five opening day games in the Joe Burrow era, so they wanted to get the starters in there, and boy, the defense did not look good. They gave up 24 first-half points to the Eagles, led by Tanner McKee at quarterback. No starters for Philly in the game. So the Bengals' defense looks like there's going to be some serious issues this year.
Man, every single year, it feels like the Bengals concoct new and creative ways to undermine Joe Burrow. I don't know if you saw this, and I wish I could remember his name, so shame on me for not giving credit to a journalist the way that shows like Mike and Mike and Jim Rome used to do for me, Colin Coward. So I'm a hypocrite, I'm sorry. Somebody at The Athletic just pulled 50 coaches, GMs, former GM scouts, and put together a quarterback list, and Burrow came in at 2. This is the proper list. That's how great Joe Burrow is, but you can't do this all by yourself. And the Bengals have kind of doubled down, Nico. It's, okay, let's see. Let's alienate several of our key players. Let's see if we can get off to a slow start, because every year the Bengals get off to this brutally slow start. And let's just not reinforce our defense and just hope that Joe Burrow can score 54 points a game. I don't know what to make of Cincinnati, because I do think the past is prelude to the present, or whatever the hell that stupid... It's not stupid, I'm just not smart enough to remember it. That expression is, I've seen them beat the Chiefs. I've seen them go into Arrowhead and playoff games and win. They're not afraid of Kansas City. Look, Buffalo's afraid of Kansas City, and they should be. There's a psychological advantage. The Ravens are afraid of Kansas City, and they should be. I haven't seen this often in my life in sports where there's such a fear factor that there. Jordan had it. LeBron never had it. Tiger had it on Sundays in majors when he wore red. The Chiefs have it. They just, especially at home at Arrowhead. And even now, I think, having gone on the road and won some critical playoff games. But the Bengals are an exception to that. But if you can't beat everybody else, it doesn't matter. You have to get to that game. You have to advance to that point. So I'm with you. I know it's a preseason game, but they looked so awful against meek competition. It makes you wonder how long Cincinnati is going to squander Joe Burrow's greatness. And he is great.
Number four.
Let's talk about a couple of quarterbacks who just arrived to the Big Apple. We'll start with the Giants. Jackson Dart, the 25th overall pick. Giants traded up to get Dart in the first round of the draft this year. He looked pretty good. 12 of 19, 154 yards, threw a touchdown pass, no turnovers, did have 3 rushes for 24 yards as well. Led the Giants in rushing in this game. And the Giants, hopefully for Brian Daboll's sake, maybe have found their quarterback.
Dude, I always, there's certain things that I just don't ever want to do, and one of them is believe in the New York Giants football team. I just don't. He looks good, doesn't he? Are you a Giants fan? I can't remember.
I am, yes.
So there you go. All right, well, I'll defer to you. You're watching it with a different eye than I am. Are you optimistic? Because I would be.
So I know it's wrong to do this, but I'm cautiously optimistic with myself because I was a believer of Daniel Jones very early on in that first year with Pat Shurmur. That first game against the Buccaneers, when he has 4 touchdowns and leads the comeback.
He showed great flashes.
I thought Daniel Jones was going to be Eli Manning 2.0.
I mean, they paid him.
Yeah. Yeah. With that being said, I'm cautious with myself to get too excited about Jackson Dart.
He looks really good. It's early. The proof will be in the regular season, and it's a marathon. I mean, it's more than that. It's a marathon under duress. It's the long walk, which, if you don't know what that is, Stephen King novel written by Richard Bachman that's coming to be a movie or something. That's how brutal it is. But I'm with you. There are at least some flashes of optimism for New York.
Number five.
Over to the other team in New York, the New York Jets. I was going to say, let's head across town, but they play in the same stadium, so can't really do that. Justin Fields made his Jets debut. He also looks pretty good. 3 for 4, 42 passing yards, did have 2 rushes for 14 yards, and a rushing touchdown, showing Jet fans all about his mobility as a quarterback.
What would be the expression? Go across the field?
I guess, right? I don't think they have the same locker room, so I guess maybe like if the locker rooms are on opposite corners, yeah, you could say go across the field.
When they play each other, yeah, they have to have separate. Anyway, I don't know. And I've been there and I've covered NFL games there. I just can't remember. I have a soft spot for Justin Fields. it's not very often that a quarterback taken of some note or any note who's on their third team and what is he at, 3 years now, is going to have success. But we've seen more of that. I keep bringing up Baker Mayfield. He's not the only example. He is an example. I'm cautiously optimistic on Justin Fields. My biggest worry for him is that the Steelers were his chance to play for an organization that knew what they were doing. They just didn't believe in him. The Bears and the Jets are hot messes. But he looks, I think he has all the talent in the world to be very successful. That was a good side. I enjoyed that. Good job, Nico. Where's Ryan Hickey doing this stuff? Where's that ambition? Where's that producing acumen? We have Ty Dunn, our friend, on the show often. Ty, longtime NFL writer, now is the guy behind, the founder of GoLongTD.com. He does long-form writing. It's sort of feature writing, but it's very investigative as well. And he, I think I'm allowed to tease this, he has been spending a lot of time on something involving the Bears. I don't know if it's positive or negative, but it's the Bears. So let's just venture to guess maybe it's not great. And every day I check his website to see if it's dropped yet. Because this is a guy that wrote the story about the Bills and their head coach using an ill-advised Osama bin Laden comparison. So it's not out yet, but we will be on that when it comes. He's got a deep dive coming. You should subscribe at GoLongTD.com. My plug for my guy, Ty Dunn. Let's talk some football with Emory Hunt next here on Rider Than You.
You're listening to the Rider Than You podcast.
All right, good morning. Welcome into the show. Bill Ryder with you. Really excited about our next guest. Emory Hunt is the owner of Football Game Plan. You can see him a bunch of places, including CBS Sports HQ. Get his content at Sportsline. Get all of what he does. It's excellent. On X at F-Ball Game Plan. That's as in football, F-Ball Game Plan. Emory, good morning. Thanks for being here.
Good morning, Bill. Appreciate you having me on, man.
All right, so I know that overreaction is what we do in America, and I'm certainly guilty of it, and it's hard maybe to draw stark conclusions from preseason games, but I'm curious if there's anything good or bad, or maybe there's nothing, Emory, you feel like you can take away from Shedeur Sanders' performance over the weekend.
Definitely you could take away the fact that he's not afraid of the moment, and I said this before the game, you know, and you could always tell from our side of things, the scouting side of things, evaluator side of things, who really does the work. Because if you watch his first game as a collegiate player at Florida against Florida A&M, who was ranked at the time, he did a great job in that debut, considering it was a torrential downpour in Miami. Then his first game we all saw at Colorado, the upset win against TCU. Like, so you know he goes into the game prepared, ready to go, and knowing the gravity of the situation where if he threw an interception, it would have been the interception heard around the world. Just like we saw that Anthony Richardson play a million times from a million different analysts, and they use that to say, hey, this guy shouldn't be a quarterback. So Shedeur, knowing all that and having to play with that added pressure, it showed you he could handle pressure. That tells you a lot about his game, more so than what he did statistically.
I love that. Emory Hunt here on the show. And Emory, I don't know what I personally think is going to happen with Shedeur Sanders. I just know that I want him to be successful. I'm rooting for him. I think he's exciting. I think it's a lot of pressure to carry that kind of name. What would a successful beginning of his NFL season look like this year? If you're in the Shedeur camp and you want 2 or 3 or 4 years from now for Shedeur to be a successful starting quarterback in the NFL, what's the sort of realistic scenario this year that begins that process? What's success?
Success is if he's able to log some starts and, you know, and shows enough, which he should, because he's a first round talent, should have been a first round pick. And I think that's what clouds a lot of folks' views of him going in the fifth round. They can't move off that. Well, he was picking the fifth round. Right? Well, no, he wasn't. You know what I'm saying? And so him getting some starts this year and showing the Browns, hey, we can build around you. I think that's a win for him, because I have jokingly said this. Him going out there with the threes and fours, is the offensive line is better than anything he had at Colorado. And if they ran the ball 7 times in this preseason game, that's a better running game than he had at Colorado. So if they could just continue to build around him, build the team up, at worst, Shedeur Sanders could be a solid game manager, a Brock Purdy type, right? But at best, he could be someone with the it factor. That's why I compared him to Joe Burrow, because he kind of has that. And all the knocks they had against him in college were the same knocks you had against Joe Burrow. Didn't have the strongest of arm, not the most mobile. Thinks he's more athletic than what he is. Takes a lot of sacks. Well, but when the game is on the line and he has to lock in, Burrow was able to do what he did, and Shedeur was able to do what he does. And that's why I think for him, just logging some starts this year, shows the Browns, hey, we could take those two first-round picks and build a significant team around this young quarterback.
He is Emory Hunt. I'm Bill Ryder. This is Ryder Than You on the Infinity Sports Network. Obviously, Emory, every situation for a young debuting quarterback is different. J.J. McCarthy is not a rookie, but this is the start from a playing perspective of his NFL career. And unlike some of these other young guys, there's an expectation, at least for his team, to win now. That was a very good Vikings team last year. That's a lot to carry. What are your expectations? What is your optimism level that he can be good enough that the Vikings can approach what they were last year?
You know, Bill, that's a great question and framing of the question, because remember how last year we were all saying, well, Caleb Williams is stepping into an ideal situation for a rookie. And it didn't work out that way for him. This year, the team looks significantly better around Caleb Williams. But when you think about that from the perspective of J.J. McCarthy, this is an ideal situation for him to step into. One, because this is his second year in the offense. So even though he was hurt last year, he's soaking up the playbook and he's, you know, getting those mental reps while, you know, getting back on the mend. And then when you add the fact that they have two top-tier talented wide receivers, a top-tier tight end, a very solid offensive line in a run game, in a defense that's top 10. Man, this is a great situation for him to be. And yes, Darnold won 14 games last year. You don't expect J.J. McCarthy to do that, but this team is definitely in play to win that division, even with a quote-unquote Ben Simmons rookie quarterback, right? Where he can come in and play his 111. And it's set up like it was in Michigan, where they have a good offensive line, good run game, and hey, J.J., we just need you to make five passes a game. Make your five passes. We'll win a lot of games. We'll win a national championship. And if Minnesota can carry that, hey, don't be a hero. Just do your 111. We're going to win a lot of games. I think they'll win at least nine games, at worst, at nine games this season.
Emory, let's dig into a little more of the NFC North, in part because I'm a long-suffering Bears fan who hates the team that I love, but in part because they're just interesting. I mean, as you know, the Lions lost both their coordinators. One of those coordinators is Ben Johnson, who's the Bears head coach now. So there's some optimism sort of in Chicago. We just talked about the Vikings. Jordan Love and the Packers have been heading in the right direction post-Aaron Rodgers. Detroit still has a lot of talent on that team. We'll see what the coordinators' changes mean or don't mean for success. How do you – I know it's early and I know the margins are thin, but as best you can guess it, how do you stack the NFC North? How do you think it shakes out this year?
Bill, you're talking to the right guy, because I've been saying this since May. The Bears are winning that division. And the reason why I like Chicago.
Yeah.
Like, it is right now, let's say Sportsline odds is plus 550, so take that right now. So, but the reason why I like the Bears, guard, center, guard play, and as a former college running back, I've always said this. Guard, center, guard play is more important than tackle play. We just got flooded by big tackle propaganda. Everybody was, oh, you got to get that. No, you got to get the guards in the guard street. And the Bears went out and got elite in that category by improving that offensive line there, which makes the tackles by osmosis a little bit better. Then you go and draft Colson Loveland to go along with Cole Kmet. You draft Luka Burton to go along with DJ Moore and also Rome Odunze. And you have a running back in DeAndre Swift who always makes that first guy miss, and a solid backup in a rookie in Kyle Manungai to go along with a defense that was really good last year. And we're seeing the defensive attitude now kind of take on the personality of Dennis Allen. And Dennis Allen is a great defensive coordinator, not a good head coach. Great defensive coordinator. And even though it was preseason, we saw his impact in that preseason game of how they stuffed the Dolphins inside the five-yard line. And when you think of that in terms of the starters playing with that aggressiveness and that mindset that Dennis Allen has on defense to go along with the offense that Ben Johnson wants to impose that physicality, and we saw some of that yesterday. That's why I like the Bears to win this division. I think they're a little bit more balanced than people give them credit for. And I know Jordan Love is there. I know Minnesota. I just laid out why I think they could be in play, too. And Detroit is still Detroit. But I feel like I have less questions about Chicago as opposed to everyone else.
Emory Hunt, you just, to quote a former editor of mine in my newspaper writing days, you were singing my song there. That I love. I love everything. I love everything about that answer. Emory Hunt, here on the show, owner, founder of Football Game Plan. See him on CBS Sports HQ. Check out his picks at Sportsline. Follow him on X at FBall Game Plan to get all of his outstanding content. What do you make of this? I'm going to leave this really open-ended. What do you make of the Bengals, how they're being run, and what you think they can or can't achieve this year?
This is what's funny about the Bengals, Bill, is they have quietly drafted well since Carson Palmer. Like, they always have talent around their quarterback that they draft, and they always draft well. And what really pisses people off in the league is the fact that they have the smallest scouting department. So it really makes other teams like, yo, what are we doing with 60 scouts and this team over here with like two dudes like running laps around us in a draft? So they can draft well. The problem they have is they struggle to retain the talent. Now, it's cool if you could draft well and consistently have a competitive team, but if you're not retaining your best players, you're running in place, and they've been running in place a lot. And it's because they're being cheap in terms of retainment and securing their best guys. If you draft well, you can overpay for your best players because you can fill in the gaps with guys that you can replace in the draft. I think that's what's so frustrating about them, because they are talented. They have a puncher's chance in every game they play. And we see now they're heavily, you know, slanted toward the offensive side of the ball. They got good players on defense, but they're playing, you know, stingy with the top defensive player in Trey Hendrickson. And you saw them play a little bit of that game with Shamar Stewart, their first-round rookie. So it's unfortunate because they have the pieces on offense to be a stellar Super Bowl team. But if you trust the defense because of how they're playing politics over there, it makes it, you know, a team that can go 13-4. But you're looking at this and seeing them go out 9-8 or struggle to get out the gate with a winning record. It makes it frustrating to watch as a whole.
All right, Emory, let me close here on the Kansas City Chiefs. And I think, and I've been guilty of this, I think sometimes we, the general sports fandom, public people out there, can become complacent to greatness or whatever's around us. The Chiefs, I know they didn't win last year. They've still played in 5 of the last 6 Super Bowls. I mean, it's remarkable the run that they're on. I ask this every year of people of your expertise level who come on the show. Who, at least on the AFC side, who's the most likely team or teams to try and stop the Chiefs from making yet another Super Bowl this upcoming season?
I grew up in New Orleans, and I grew up a Saints fan. And my pick for the Super Bowl every year since I was a kid was Saints-Raiders, because the Raiders used to always come on TV in the AFC on NBC at the time. So I used to always see a lot of Raiders games, but damn sure saw every Saints game, like Saints-Raiders every year, right? And so the Chiefs got to be in a conversation every year. So every year, I think I'm going to say the Baltimore Ravens. As long as Lamar Jackson is there, at some point, they're going to kick the door down. At some point, they're going to do it. Buffalo is also in the mix because we've seen them have the type of play in the playoffs to get it done. I think when you look at those two teams, you got to start there. We've seen Cincinnati do it, but they have to get to the playoffs in order to do that. So there's a bunch of teams that can get KC. I like Houston's defense against the Chiefs, but can they stay healthy on offense and can they stay healthy in the backfield more so anything to close out some games in the postseason? So if I had to say right now, Baltimore, Buffalo, Houston, Cincinnati would be the four teams that can knock off Kansas City in the postseason.
Emory Hunt, this was great. Really enjoyed your debut here on the show. We'll do it a lot more going forward. Thank you so much for making us smarter on football today.
I appreciate y'all. Thanks for having me on. Looking forward to it again.
Thank you, man. Emory Hunt on the show, owner of Football Game Plan. Check him out at CBS Sports HQ. He does picks for Sportsline. You can get him at F Ball Game Plan, as in football. F Ball Game Plan. over on X. Phone number here on the show, 888-710-4ISN. Those of you that are welcoming me back from being off last week in Chicago on vacation, appreciate you. Thank you. J-Rock, I did a Happy Gilmore review earlier. Reminds me. So silly. Chubbs died because he fell out a window. I think it was Happy's fault, too. It was. That's 100%. So Happy also accidentally killed someone else in the movie. I won't tell you who. You gotta watch it. And Pete P, who got mad at me earlier for saying that Deion might be a top five NFL player of all time. I think he might be. That is high praise. Wrote at SportsWriter, just so you don't think I'm always angry and negative, love your assessment of Bryce Baker and the Panthers and Browns as organizations. Glad you're back. Kindest regards and warmest respect, which I got after. You're an idiot. But I like both of it. I like all of it. If you want to hit us up, 888-710-4ISN. It is great to be back on the air. We'll be doing buy or sell next here on Writer.
You're listening to the Writer Than You podcast. Welcome back to Writer Than You.
There is a fascinating do-or-die fork in the road. Is he Neon Deion or is he Levon Deion? That didn't work, but I'm going to keep... It's Friday. I'm going to go over some puns.
On the Infinity Sports Network.
All right, welcome back into the show. Bill Writer with you. Thank you for hanging out and listening to the program. Great to be back on the air. Great to be back on the air. Missed you guys. Missed doing the show. Did have a great time being back in my home state of Iowa, seeing my parents, remembering that there's real heat. I'm so spoiled in L.A. What's the weather in New York today? Is it hot?
Yeah, today it's like 80 and sunny, so pretty good.
It was 89 in Iowa. It was great. A little heat, you know, never hurt anybody. Great to be home. All right, let's do a little buy or sell.
What side will Bill take on the biggest issues in the world of sports? It's time for today's edition of Buy or Sell on Writer Than You.
All right, why don't we start in the AFC East. The New England Patriots also playing in their first preseason game this weekend. Drake May did see the field, had a fumble, though, bad fumble. Mike Vrabel, when asked about it post-game, did not hold back.
That's a bad decision. You know, I think we're going to need better from him, and I think he knows that, and that's obvious. So, you know, wasn't there, and you know, we just have to be able to find a way to get rid of the football or take a sack and punt and play defense.
Obviously, Vrabel's first year in New England coaching with Drake May at quarterback. Buy or sell, do you think Vrabel being tough on the young quarterback will be good for him in the long run?
I mean, I'll buy.
Buy.
In the sense that at least this quarterback, or this coach, excuse me, is being hard on his quarterback while also giving that quarterback an offensive coordinator. I don't talk enough about the fact that Bill Belichick didn't have an offensive coordinator in a critical sophomore year for their then quarterback of the future. So all of that to say this, I think Vrabel's a really good coach. I think he's going to run a professional organization. He's going to be hard on players. That's his makeup. I know him a little bit. I know his agent well. He's really competitive. That gruffness is part of the deal, but it should come with a football team that's run professionally, which hasn't been true in New England for a while. And maybe was less true than we thought. I mean, it's hard now to know to what degree Tom Brady wasn't just the best quarterback of all time, but the biggest Band-Aid in the history of sports based on some of the things we've seen from Belichick. So it's a long-winded answer, but I still have optimism. Maybe not this year, but eventually Vrabel's going to succeed in New England.
Also going off of that, the last 2 years now we've had a team pick in the top five in the draft and then make the postseason the year after. We saw with the Houston Texans after they took C.J. Stroud, and then last year with the Washington Commanders and Jaden Daniels. When you look at the five worst teams from last year, the Titans, Browns, Giants, Patriots, and Jaguars, buy or sell that of those five teams, the Pats have the best chance to make the postseason?
Oh, man. It's hard because the AFC is so brutal. Buy or sell, and it's okay if you can call me an idiot, it's fine, but I'm a bit of an idiot for when I see the Jags still wanting to believe in Trevor Lawrence.
Sell.
I really do. I really kind of, because it's not his fault. He got ruined. by Urban Meyer in dysfunction. I'll sell. I don't
sell.
I don't think it's the Patriots. The Giants wouldn't shock me, in part because they play in the NFC. The Jags would probably shock me, but maybe less than the other teams. I have no confidence. No confidence in the Titans. I think the best case scenario for Abel this year in the Patriots, and they've invested a lot in players on the defensive side, is sort of what we have seen, and I'm not saying he's this guy. I'm just saying best case scenario is a very poor man's version of the Steelers, where they grind out wins, they don't turn the ball over, they play good football, their defense is really great, they're the toughest team on the football field most of the times they play, and they kind of they keep themselves in contention and then win some games down the stretch that they shouldn't, where they squeak out a 9 ain't going to be enough, a 10-win season and maybe get in. I'm not sure I'm buying that. I mean, think about the Dolphins. I mean, there's a lot of teams that have aspirations to make the playoffs that very well may not.
Over to the NFC South, one of the more shocking draft picks, in my opinion, at least from this past year's draft, quarterback Tyler Shuck was taken 40th overall by the New Orleans Saints. He's 25 years old entering the NFL. He played a lot in yesterday's preseason game against the Chargers, 15 for 22, 165 yards, one touchdown, one interception. That quarterback room is, I don't even know how you want to describe it. Tyler Shuck, Spencer Rattler, and Jake Haener are the three quarterbacks on the Saints roster. Buy or sell that Shuck should be the starter for the Saints on opening day?
Man, I don't even know. Buy? Question mark?
Buy!
I'll tell you this. That organization is Shuck. Get it, Shuck. Okay.
Love what you did there.
I tried. I worked on it. I mean, they drafted him with almost a first-round draft pick. I mean, it's a high second-round draft pick. And so if he has shown enough to be close to the starter, you probably start the guy. Also, when you draft someone who's 82 years old as your first-round draft pick, you don't have a lot of time. I mean, you know, the experience is supposed to outweigh the lack of time that you get to use him. And so it's not as if you want him on the shelf for 2 years and wait till he's 27 years old. Yeah, yes, yes.
Which is why I thought it was such a weird pick, because usually when teams take a quarterback in the second round, you know that they're not going to start right away, but it's okay because you're thinking, oh, we have time to develop this guy.
Super weird.
You took a 25-year-old. By the time he plays, if he's already 27, it's like weird.
In the second round. I'm with you. If only Shedeur Sanders had been available. Just kidding. He was.
Over to your Chicago.
Buy or sell in retrospect, the Saints should have drafted Shedeur Sanders at 40.
Buy.
Absolutely, yeah. Let's talk about your Chicago Bears. Caleb Williams and the starters did not play in yesterday's preseason opener with the new coaching staff. Ben Johnson obviously trying to get his guys comfortable with the new playbook and system. Buy or sell that Caleb not playing yesterday was a huge mistake.
It's a tricky one because you certainly had players express some their belief that playing in preseason games is critical to getting it off to a good start in the NFL regular season. The Bengals come to mind. That's a team that has struggled early in seasons, and they've had guys, high-profile guys, say that. They've said it this year. On the other hand, there's some reporting out of Chicago that feels credible that Caleb Williams and the offense is struggling to master what is a pretty complicated system from Ben Johnson. And I'm not sure you want your debut under Ben Johnson to be embarrassing, even if it is preseason. So I'll sell that it's a massive mistake.
Sell.
I will buy. It's small. Small, but a small warning sign. Just a small level of worry. I'll just buy that.
Buy.
Worry is my natural state of things as a Bears fan, though.
Well, let me ask you this.
But I'm a little worried.
Because we talk so much about how important the preseason is, whether it is or not, and there's been a lot of conversation that they're going to add an 18th game eventually and only have two preseason games. If we see more examples like this, though, where teams aren't necessarily ready for even the preseason, buy or sell that you're against getting rid of that third preseason game.
Sell. I don't sell. Like the preseason. I just don't. I think teams will adjust. By the way, Bryce Young played against the Browns. We discussed this earlier in the show. He had one drive. He was a successful drive. He looked sharp. He got off the field. part of the reason guys don't play is because they don't have to. There's other preseason games. The coaching staff doesn't want to risk them. I think the preseason's stupid. I mean, honestly, like, my take on this is there should be a single preseason game just before the season starts, and everything should be left up to individual coaching staffs to figure out how they want to get their guys prepared and ready to go. Now, not everybody agrees. We've had, again, Bengals players who say, no, now you're going to play actual games. The problem is, like, even a stupid, silly preseason game that doesn't matter is going to rate better than most sports, and the NFL is not going to give that away.
From one number one overall pick to another, Kyler Murray took the field on Saturday night against the Kansas City Chiefs, went 7-for-8, 96 yards, did have a really ugly interception in the red zone. Buy or sell that this is finally the year that Kyler Murray takes that next step?
Sell. I can remember talking, was this 2 or 3 years ago now, about the Kyler Murray contract extension. Before it happened, before we knew that written into that was you should do your job properly and do the study and all those silly things. Just the catch 22. You have to pay him. He's not going to be successful. He's not. There's no. Whatever needs to be there is not there. He doesn't have it. I don't know what it is. Maybe it's the study habits because, again, this was in the initial contract. They took it out because of the blowback from it. No, I have very little. Buy or sell, you have confidence Kyler Murray will be a top 10 quarterback 3 of the next 4 seasons.
Sell.
I don't either. I mean, forget elite, great. I'm not even sure that he can be Baker Mayfield. He can't be.
The Denver Broncos are looking to take that next step with Bo Nix at quarterback. Last week, Sean Payton told the media he thinks the Broncos are good enough to win the Super Bowl. Buy or sell that you think the Broncos are a legit Super Bowl contender?
I'm going to sell.
Sell.
Buy or sell, you think he believes that?
Sell.
Yeah, I think they're good enough. Look, they overachieved last year, and there's a clip out there of me saying Sean Payton basically is awful and is never going to be successful. It's all going to be bad. People like to send it to me. It's really fun. And I was wrong. He's done a great job, and I wasn't sure. They're on the right track. I don't think they'll make a conference championship game this year. Again, I mean, this is the same. I'm going to beat the same drum here. It's the AFC. The Chiefs have made 5 of the last 6 Super Bowls. Do I think the Broncos can get past 2 of the following teams? The Chiefs, the Ravens, the Bills, even the Texans, even the Bengals if they figure it out. I'm not even sure who I take in a playoff game or a week 17 game for the playoffs between the Chargers and the Broncos, right? But I do think they could win a playoff game. I think with the right, the problem with the AFC is you can have a great season, you can match up with the wrong team and your season's over. I mean, it's just, the AFC is brutal. I don't think I'd take him over the Steelers. And I don't even believe in Aaron Rodgers.
Buy or sell that you think the sophomore slump, especially at the quarterback position, is a real thing?
Buy. I think it is a real thing.
Buy.
Not every year. So, C.J. Stroud's a great example. He wasn't bad last year. But he wasn't Jaden Daniels. And Jaden Daniels may not be Jaden Daniels this year. It is really, really hard to maintain that level of excellence, in part because there's so much tape on you. And you've shown defensive coordinators they damn well better pay attention to you, that the combination of their effort and energy into you more than before and the tape to help do it is just they're going to make adjustments and then you'll have to adjust to those. And so I think you're right. That's another really good point. Just the Broncos could win 11 games. It wouldn't surprise me if they win 8-9. I think 8-11 wins is their range. That's not a championship level team probably.
Well, if Sean Payton does want to get his team all the way to the Super Bowl, I hope he took notes from what this team did last year. That would be the Philadelphia Eagles. They did, however, get some bad news over the weekend. Their Pro Bowl left guard, Landon Dickerson, was helped off the field with an apparent leg injury. He's going for an MRI today. We have not yet gotten the results, but buy or sell that the Eagles without Landon Dickerson was a big enough loss to say that they'd no longer be the favorite in the NFC.
I mean, it's a huge loss. Who are you worried about in the NFC? Is there a Niners renaissance? Eh, maybe. Is there an NFC North team that you really fear? I don't even know the answer. I'm not even sure. Oh, I'll sell.
Sell.
I think they're still the favorites. But I think it's another. It's hard to reap. I mean, again, the Chiefs, what they do is not normal. It's not normal. The Eagles were in the Super Bowl a couple years before they won it, and they lost to Kansas City, and then they didn't get back. It's just, it's hard to get back to those things, even when you're in a lesser conference. Let me ask you a question. Buy or sell, you think the AFC is three times more formidable than the NFC?
Buy.
Yeah, maybe four times. So that's part of the thing. There are some good teams in the NFC, but there are going to be teams that don't make the playoffs in the AFC who I think would win playoff games in the NFC this year.
That's my biggest thing, and this is more just me being an Eagles hater, but I know it's wrong to do this, but it bothered me last year watching the Eagles get all the way to the Super Bowl, because I know they ended up beating the Chiefs, but doing it once is a lot easier than having to go through the Bills, Ravens, and the Chiefs. So
yes.
I was annoyed watching those playoff games, like when they played the Commanders in the NFC Championship. I was like, this is the easiest conference championship game ever.
Because you don't. Well, I mean, the Commanders are good because you don't like the Eagles, though.
Right, right.
Because you're a Giants fan. I mean, whatever. They earned it. They got there. But yeah, I mean, the Commander. I mean, that's again sophomore slump. It's they overachieved last year and they're building something. I mean, the Bears, the Packers, maybe. It's
every team. It seems like has a question mark.
Buy or sell, you're with me. The NFC is even easier than last year.
Buy. Yeah.
Vikings are a lesser team. Big question marks around Detroit. The Commanders have an opportunity for their own sophomore slump, for their own remarkable last year rookie quarterback. Not sure what to make of the Niners this year. I just don't know. And it's hard to repeat.
All right, last one for you. I know it sounds, from what you've said, that you had an awesome time in Iowa when you were on vacation last week. But buy or sell that you're so excited to be back and don't still wish you were on vacation.
Actually, buy. I am. So I have had, for the last 15 years, two jobs until now. Because CBS and I made a decision non-jointly for that to be the case. But I love this job. Like, I didn't like the other jobs a lot of the time, which is reality, right? A lot of you listening don't always love your job. That's part of the... So it's a little different coming back from vacation, because right now the only thing I'm doing is something that I actually truly love doing. So I woke up... So I get up at about 4 in the morning my time for the show, sometimes 4:30. I woke up at 3 just wide awake. Like, yeah, let's go! I was also in Eastern time, or Central time. Let's go! But I'm really happy to be back. By the way, I had one of the best hamburgers I've ever had in my entire life when I was in Des Moines, Iowa, at a place called, it's called the High Life Lounge. Had a grain belt. Have you ever had a grain belt beer?
I have not. What is different
about
regular beer?
It's like a cheap beer. Well, it's a brand of beer, but they only sell it. I can't remember if grain belt is made in Wisconsin or Minnesota. I don't know. But they only sell it in that state and the states that border it. So you can't get it in L.A. Can't get it where you are.
I kind of like that, though.
It's good, dude. It's like, I don't know how to describe it. Someone once described it as fruity pebbles. That's not even remotely accurate, but it is a little green tint to it. It's just, anyway, I had some great, had a tenderloin that was life-changing. I had some, oh my God, this is such a cliche, but I had sweet corn every day. Literally every night I was there, I had sweet corn. Amazing. Amazing. All right, let's circle back to a little bit of Anthony Richardson and just how disastrous this is going.
You're listening to the Writer Than You podcast.
All right, welcome back into the show. Bill Ryder with you here on Writer Than You on the Infinity Sports Network. Are you a UFC fan, Nico?
No.
Okay. I think it's an amazing sport. I used to... So many years ago when I worked as a columnist, a national columnist at FoxSports.com, our UFC writer quit last minute. It was weird. They're gone. And they asked me to cover it. So I covered it for maybe, I don't know, 5 or 6 months. I remember before he became very famous and very successful and a billionaire many times over, I spent a week writing about Dana White and hanging out with him. That was fun. He was cool. And I followed the sport. I love it. I think it's incredible. I think it's riveting. There's massive skill involved. The violence didn't bother me. I actually find it less, I don't know what the word is, the violence defines it less for me than boxing does. And I'm not taking a shot at boxing, boxing fans. I was a very amateur, very, 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 very amateur boxer for a very, 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 very short time. I just think there's an art in a chess match to UFC. The problem with it, I think, for me as a reporter and writer, as a media person, and maybe for fans, is it turns over really quickly. You know how college football, every 3 or 4 years, your teams turn over. And so if you don't follow it for 3 or 4 years, you can kind of lose track of what's going on. But you're paying attention. It's a slow pace of play. You know, college basketball maybe is a better comp because those guys often get drafted after the first year. College basketball can turn over really quickly. UFC can turn over in 3 months. And it is a very grueling, violent sport. You've got people that are aspiring to make a bunch of money, but you have to get to the top of that pyramid. If you stop paying attention to the UFC for 5 months or 6 months or 7 months, you may not know what's going on. Because I can remember being pretty close to an expert at UFC, at MMA, mostly UFC, when I started this radio show in 2016 or 17. And then other stuff was going on. I had a TV show. I had this show. Probably don't talk a lot of UFC on the radio. And then I remember 6 or 7 months later, I went sort of plugged back in, and I didn't know what was going on. I think that this news by Paramount Plus, basically CBS Sports, but by Paramount Plus, that they're going to have it no longer be under a paywall is really good for UFC. Because part of the reason I think it can be hard to follow, and look, if you're listening and you're a UFC fan, I don't need to sell you on it, right? But the goal of these major sports is not to bring in the diehard fan. They already have that. Unless you're the NFL, if you're hockey, if you're the NBA, if you're Major League Baseball, if you're UFC, if you're golf, if you're tennis, if you're any of these sports, WNBA, your goal is to grow beyond the people who will watch no matter what you do. And I think part of what's hard about UFC is it's hard to follow because there's so much turnover, there's so many divisions, there's so much going on. Part of the reason I think Ronda Rousey was such a big deal, Conor McGregor was such a big deal, was not just their dominance, that was part of it, and was not just their Q rating, they just had that it factor. They had some longevity. And so you can sort of be like, oh, okay, I don't really know a lot about UFC, but I know about Conor McGregor. Very similar to Caitlin Clark. Like, oh, I don't really know a lot about I can't name most of the WNBA teams. I can't. But I can tell you about Caitlin Clark. I think the UFC has a chance to have this huge opportunity because if you already subscribe to Paramount Plus, and I do for Champions League soccer, if you already subscribe, I'll throw those things on. And now all of a sudden you don't have to go and be like, oh, I have to get the pay-per-view, and the pay-per-view is expensive, and my buddy who splits it with me is out of town, or his wife is mad at him because he's spending money on that. We'll see what happens. I think it has potential. It's not a guarantee. It has the potential to be very significant for the sport. It's a lot of competition, though. I mean, I don't know, in 3 or 4 years, because I've got kids, Nico's turning, he's old, man, he's turning 26 on Thursday, so he's got life, you know, we all have the different things we're doing. You can't watch everything all the time. You just can't. And I'll be really curious in 2 or 3 years whether it's UFC that's broken through or maintain whatever breakthrough it has, whether it's the WNBA, if Caitlin Clark is enough and some of the other athletes to carry that sport to being relevant 2 or 3 years from now. I think she can be if she can stay healthy. I think baseball's been, I have to admit this, congratulations, Mr. Manfred. I've always loved the sport. I think the changes that he's made, I think it's in a really healthy place. I am on an island here. I think a strike or a lockout is fine. I'm here for it if it creates a salary cap and a salary floor. I know that those are different goals for the players versus the owners, but I think baseball's on the verge of massive potential relevance. I think the NBA is in an interesting position, has the chance to be very, very relevant if they can just navigate the post-Steph, post-LeBron era. And I think they're helped by the fact that when Jordan went away, he was beloved. When LeBron goes away, he's going to be largely loathed. And some of that's for politics reasons that I think are stupid. Some of that's just because he's an unlikable guy half the time. I can speak to that from experience. So there might be, there's an opportunity for UFC. What is it, Nico, you haven't had time? Is it you don't like the gore? I'm very curious, because I haven't watched it a lot the last 6 or 7 years, but when I did watch it, I was captivated by it.
Yeah, so my brother and my dad are actually really into it. So it's on a lot in my house. And I have so much respect for the guys that do it. I think it's awesome for them. I just can't do the gore. I'm so bad with that stuff. Like, one time my brother cut his finger open, and I had to drive him to the hospital. And I almost passed out in the driver's seat.
Why?
Because I saw his finger, like, bleeding and cut open really bad. So the gore is what takes me away from the UFC, but like I said, I have so much respect for everyone that loves it and the guys that do it. I know it's really big, so.
What would happen if I'm in New York in October, if next time I'm in the studio, if you were filling in and you were working on a different show, if I came in, I go, oh, and I pretend to scratch myself, and I did a fake sort of cut on my arm and fake blood started pouring out, would you pass out?
I don't think I would, like, fully pass out, but my legs would get a little wobbly.
You'd have some struggles.
Yeah. Yeah, it wouldn't be good.
And by the way, maybe my analysis on the UFC is really smart and insightful and wise and on point. And maybe I'm just revealing myself to be cheap as hell. I don't know. Because I guess I could have just paid for the pay-per-views over the... But I'm going... Like, I already paid for... And Paramount Plus isn't that much money. Pay-per-view is expensive. And there are fights all the time in UFC. It feels like every 2 or 3 weeks it's UFC 1058 or whatever we're at. It's not that high. I'm excited to just have it on and see if I can get into it again. I think it's a really, really great sport. We again gave Anthony Richardson short shrift here on the show. He's just not very good. And it leaves the Colts in a pretty dire position because Daniel Jones isn't exactly a savior of epic proportions. And we've had guests on the program. The minute that Anthony Richardson basically quit on his team was the minute he had to be three times as good to ever reclaim their respect in his position. And he's not. He's just not good enough. And I understand the frustration if you're the Colts because he has everything that you should have, that you would want. If you were going to design in a laboratory a quarterback to whatever specifications you would think would make him successful, this would be it. The guy's got an incredible arm. He's athletic. He's tall. He can move outside the pocket. He's just not good enough at the quarterback position. And whatever the reasons are, it is long since time for the Colts to move on. And it isn't easy to draft. It isn't easy to project. It isn't easy to predict. And I already told you, I can't make anything heads or tails out of Shedeur Sanders' future from a preseason game. Told you at the start of the show, my takeaway is I'm rooting for that guy. But if you're rolling with some 25-year-old in New Orleans, if you're rolling with Anthony Richardson in Indianapolis, I mean, these are just a couple of the examples. I'm not saying first round, not even second round. In retrospect, how does Shedeur Sanders not go in the third round just as an opportunity? I mean, I would much rather have Shador's potential ceiling than Daniel Jones' very clear floor, very clear reality that he's not going to be the guy. Anyway, good luck, Colts. It'll be a long season. Hasn't even started yet. Really enjoyed Emory Hunt being on the show. Fun first time opportunity to have him on the program. Thanks to him. Thank you to Nico, who will be here tomorrow and Wednesday, but let's just ramp up for that birthday celebration. He's going to get crazy. Some beach volleyball maybe. Maybe a couple drinks. So we'll get ready for a birthday bash for him. And thank you for listening wherever you are. It is great to be back on the air. Missed you. Missed being on the show. I am Bill Ryder. The show is Ryder Than You. We'll see you back here tomorrow on the Infinity Sports Network.